Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hi, hello, and welcome to the Average to Good podcast known as Call What You Want. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Jesse Marsh and Charlie Davies, and we've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about the Olympics and our U23s and our overage players. Who do we think should go? And only 18-man rosters. So there's not a lot of spots to give out, especially when two of them are goalkeepers. We have a special interview with a player that we think will be on that Olympic team. His name is Tanner Tessman, plays for Venezia in Italy. And then we have a little Open Cup with a special guest, a head coach from El Farolito, Santiago Lopez. So that should be a lot of fun. Then we all have good stuff as always. But first, we got the word of the day. Are you guys ready for this? Who has the championship belt? I think that's you, Chuck.
Yes, the champ is here. Let's go.
What do you mean? Like, this is so ridiculous.
Who you what the Chuck
Let's go.
Let's go. Make sure everybody's playing at home and ready to go. The word of the day. Now we're focusing on the word for the last line of defense, the goalkeeper. Okay, so in what corner of the world is this better known as? Atizain. What language
Bless
is
you.
This? And you're thank you. And where is this word spoken? I got
Atizain.
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 Atizain. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Again, we're going right to clues. So while you're processing
go
this,
to, yeah, clues. Go to
during last idea, go ahead. During last month's international break, Uruguay played this non-FIFA or UEFA affiliated national team in a friendly. Okay. Okay. Hold on. Next
Catalan.
Clue. Three current Premier League managers were born and raised in the region where this language is spoken.
Basque.
Jesse Marsh. Basque. He got it, Chuck. Oh, man. Give him back the belt, Chuck. Oh, that was a knockout.
Atizan.
Yeah, that's right. Basque. So it was 1-1 in a friendly at the Stadio San Mamis. And the three managers are Mikel Arteta, Unai Emery, who faced off this past weekend. Unai getting some revenge against his former club, Arsenal. Sorry, Chuck. I know you're an Arsenal supporter. A lot of tears over there. And then Andoni Iraola. Iraola, who is the
Xabi.
Coach of Bournemouth.
Xabi's also Basque, right? Xabi Alonso, champion of Germany.
That's right. Dude, how good have they been?
Amazing. Amazing what Leverkusen does.
Chuck, you've been pretty quiet. You just lost the belt. What's happening?
Yeah. No. He has to go mute. That his punishment is to go mute.
I'm kind of 30 seconds. With that one. That was impressive from Jesse. To get it that quick.
So. Well, I said Catalan first, right? I was close in even in the
You were close. Yeah. You were close. All right, let's talk a little Olympics. Obviously, that's coming. We're 100 days away until the Olympic group stage kicks off. The U.S. is taking France on in game one. Where are we going with this team? Because I start to put together a roster, and when I look back at our three previous Olympics, one of our overage players was always a goalkeeper. And it was Casey Keller, Brad Friedel, and Brad Guzan. I don't know if we need a goalkeeper this time around, which then gives us some room and some flexibility in other areas. There was also an Olympics where we only took two of the three overage players. So maybe we don't need to take all of those. Oh, no. I think that we will. Chuck, where are you on this? Because I know you participated in the 2008 Beijing Olympics, which is a big thrill. But who'd you have? You had Guzan, Parkhurst, and Brian McBride, correct? And your overage?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I would agree that we needed two of the three. And it's not because Brian McBride played my position that I don't think we necessarily need
here
Brian
we
McBride.
Go.
No, what I'm saying is that the three overage players need to address a part of the field that is needed, right? We needed a goalkeeper. We brought Brad Guzan. We needed a center back, probably two, but we took just Michael Parkhurst, and that forced Mo Adu to then play center back instead of his preferred midfield position, which I think ultimately he should have been a center back in the long run. And he thinks about it all the time. Man, that was a real missed opportunity for him to have longevity as a professional playing the center back position and probably reach higher ceiling. But ultimately, if you look at the three overage players from other countries, I mean, you look at Argentina, they brought Juan Ramon, Riquelme, Javier Mascherano. I mean, you really not don't bad. Get better than that. Throw it in with Messi, Aguero, Di Maria, Zabaleta, Fernando Gago. Like that's pretty good. Ronaldinho was brought for Brazil. And guess what? Argentina won the gold and Brazil and Ronaldinho got the bronze. We ended up losing to Nigeria and Nigeria took the silver medal in the group stage. But ultimately, I think the three overage players add a lot to the team. That it's a big benefit. One, to strengthen the team, but two, for the experience. And so in terms of Brian McBride being with us, he had played at the highest level. He had won.
You think it was a leadership play? Like you brought him in?
Yes, I do. 100%. Yeah. Okay. We had a lot of young players with, you know, high energy levels, you know, excitement. And we needed to be, you know, corralled and brought in along. And I think that Brian McBride was perfect for that.
I mean, I'm not sure we need a goalkeeper because I think the likes of Gago and Schulte, maybe a few others, I think we could be solid enough in that position. I think center back, maybe even two center backs, and then maybe a striker.
A nine.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, unless Pepe is on the bubble with Copa America, and then does he go to, and then is he one of the strikers? Or you could still argue that you could complement it with one more. That's the question. Is in the end a little bit for me is which players, European under 23 players, are going to be in Copa America and maybe eliminated from being in the Olympics based on their clubs not wanting them to go. And then maybe what overage players either go or don't play as much don't go to Copa America or don't play as much. And how do you get that balance right? That's the trickiest part for me is I love when you say that the big nations, they have a few players that take it very seriously and they want to be there. Right. So maybe John Brooks in this category is, I don't know, you know, do you think a little bit more outside the box and find some really talented, experienced players who really want to go to the Olympics and enjoy being on the U.S. national team and can help fortify a little bit of a foundation for what we will need going into this tournament. So, I don't know. This is the tricky part with the Olympics always is which players have real interest in going and which have the real opportunity of actually being let go by their clubs.
I think what's interesting, I tried to put a list together and we've already discussed it where I thought center back was still an area where we could use some help and not just bringing one. I thought, why not just bring two? Why not bring two? And if I guess the number nine is a point of interest where we could add, but if Ricardo Pepi is available, and you have Duncan McGuire, and you have some guys that can maybe play it if you needed a Cade Cowell, et cetera. But I'm kind of curious, Chuck, as to which number nines you'd like to see. But I think bringing two center backs would be very, very interesting. It could be a Mark McKenzie and someone else who okay, if they're in Copa America, but maybe not playing a lot. I don't know when you have to make the decision. I guess I should know that as to when you have to name your roster. But that those conversations are going to have to happen with the full team, because if you do bring Mark McKenzie in, but no, you're not going to rely on him ultimately for Copa America. He's just there for cover. He could be a good choice. I'm using him as an example. You know, Miles Robinson was somebody we discussed before, but imagine a center back pairing where you could have two guys that have a ton of experience and you lock that area of the field down, and then they're just putting guys in good spots to make plays. Now, though, I know Miles Robinson had the captain's armband in the first game of the year in that January camp. And does he exude that type of leadership that I think we need to see from that position? That would still be a big question for me. And did he answer that question during that camp? And or do we need to see more of that? Or do we want to rely on him in that capacity?
Yeah, I think the answer is no. That wasn't enough for me. Robinson, I agree. I like him. I think he's a good player, but it was not enough in that match. Not even close.
Also,
Ivis brings up here. Sorry, Ivis brings up maybe McKenzie and Trusty together.
Trusty's not a bad shot either. I like that one too.
Where they were partners with the Philadelphia Union, so they had they already have a good relationship and know how you know how to play with each other.
The only thing is, if Mark McKenzie's making he may be making a move in the summer. It's possible. Then you probably don't want to miss out on your preseason, you know, so that may be a factor. I know.
That's where it gets tricky too. There's just,
you know, this is, this is what it's tricky. This is why in the past, even when we've talked about this, I've sometimes mentioned MLS guys, whether Miles Robinson or some of the guys that I know, like Aaron Long and Matt Miazga, because
Walker Zimmerman is healthy as well. Yeah.
Walker Zimmerman is a good shout. You're just trying to figure out which guys are available and which guys would add to what's being built there already. I mean, clearly they have a great last FIFA window. And so, you know, if they can find the right pieces, then, you know, I mean, they can make things interesting.
You know, you're talking about the nine. I don't think we'll see Balogun being available for this. I think Ricardo Pepi is a real realistic option given right now with PSV. This is the second week in a row he's not in the team, right? His agent spoke out. He kind of backed his agent in a way, just saying, yeah, it's not ideal being the backup and the backup to the captain who isn't going anywhere. And he's also producing, right? Not in the team, not injured. So maybe this is a chance for him to build a stock. If he wants that move, Ernie Stewart will allow him to go to the Olympics and play. And then it's on him to continue to show what he's made of. And if he wants a move, this is how you can do it. So I think the nine for the U.S. Olympic team is critical, and they have to go up. They have to bring somebody in who has experience and who has scores, who can score goals. Cause Duncan McGuire is good, but you need someone who, I think if you're trying to get a medal, you need somebody with a little bit more experience and quality.
Would you consider Brandon Vasquez? And I say this when I think about player profiles, right? I feel like Duncan McGuire and Brandon Vasquez, no, not completely similar, still all share some player profiles. It's not a complete contrast in styles that maybe you would be looking for. However, you might get that contrast from your wing play. So maybe having players that do have some similarities. I mean, Vasquez,
the player I'd want is Josh Sargent. Josh Sargent would be the player.
Interesting. Is he age eligible? Is he too old?
No, as an overage.
An overage.
Yeah.
So would you bring two center backs then, Chuck? Or would you go?
Yes, I would bring two center backs.
When I started to do the list, it just made a lot more sense. With all due respect to the young guys
this
on
group,
the team.
This group has a number of talented young midfielders, talented, you know, wingers.
Attacking players.
Right? You need some quality defensive stability
foundation,
and that keeps them in the game no matter who they're playing.
Right.
Keep it close as long as you have somebody who can organize the team well, keep them compact when needed. I think that's the key for this team to make a far run in Paris.
What's interesting is you got two goalkeepers, so that puts us down to 16, and then you're having three overage players, which leaves 13 spots for this younger group that have been kind of grinding it out. That's going to be highly competitive. So shout out to Marko Mitrovic and his coaching staff for trying to figure out the right
combination and trying to find the right chemistry of guys. Like, that's going to be a big challenge. Would you bring Brian Reynolds, John Tolkien? Are these the guys that you're seeing as the outside backs?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. No, I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah,
we saw these guys play against France already in France, and it's not the France A team. And obviously they're going to bringing three overage players. I mean, Mbappe's talked about it. Griezmann has talked about it. They all want to play. It's in Paris. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. If you're with the French national team, the French setup, even if I was Olivier Giroud, I'd have my hand up. Right. So you're going to be playing an incredible team, and this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And for an American to go up against that and feel what that atmosphere is like, to be a part of that, that's the stuff of dreams. That's what gets you to propel yourself to the next level. So in my mind, you want to make sure that the three overage players are going to help you, you know, continue to make an impact in the Olympic Games. And in that France game, we saw Kevin Paredes step up and have some moments. Griffin Yao step up and have some moments. Cade Cowell. So those are the guys. You have strong midfielders, Tanner Tessman, Busio, McGlynn, you know, guys who have played professionally for a while, and wingers who are dynamic. You're just missing that nine and two center backs, even though the two center backs did well in that game.
All right, break time. And guess what? We got a special guest, Tanner Tessman, coming up to join us right after this. Don't go anywhere.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Welcome back to Call It What You Want, and as promised, we have a very special guest joining us all the way from Venice in Italy. Plays for Venezia, 22-year-old Alabama native Tanner Tessman is on the show. Tanner, thank you so much.
Welcome.
For giving us your time and really just showing us your handsome face, especially because you're coming off a brace against Brescia this past weekend in Serie B. You're now in third in the table with five games left to go as you try to get into promotion of Serie A. How are you feeling, man? That is a fantastic performance. Congrats.
Thank you for the intro. Yeah. No, doing well. Obviously, important result on the weekend. Five more games to go. We're right there, so we just got to stay in it. So feeling good. Happy to be here.
So Tanner, I want to get into just how things have been for you as you adjusted in Italy. I think, you know, you're playing Serie A and then you go to Serie B. What has been the difference? What has been the adjustments in the style of play as you're trying to continue to develop personally to become the best player you can be and fulfill your potential while now playing against different types of opponents?
Yeah, I think when I came to Serie A 3 years ago, I was, you know, still developing as a player, learning how to play in European football. So these past 3 years just focused a lot on defensive stuff and understanding the tactics better. But yeah, the main difference in Serie A and Serie B to me is just, you know, the technical ability of players. You know, they're a lot more dangerous than especially defensively as well. It's harder to score on teams in Serie A. But, you know, in Serie B, we have a lot of good teams. We have a lot of good players and the matches are a lot more even in Serie A. You know, if you play away at Inter, you're hoping for a good result, but you know, anything's on the table. Whereas in Serie B, I mean, every match is a battle. Every team could be any team. Every game is open. So yeah, it's a lot more competitive in my opinion, throughout the ranks. But it's been a great learning experience for me.
Yeah. When I watch you play, I can see the influence of Italian football and what you're doing, what they're asking you to do.
You're also a great passer, especially of long distances, in that six position, catching the ball, finding the other side. I mean, specifically, what are your main instructions when you're defensively and in shape? And then specifically, what are your main instructions when you have the ball?
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, I think every game it changes. Like we have, you know, a lot of different ideas, a lot of different tactics depending on who we play. But yeah, defensively, the main role when we play against teams with two strikers is kind of stay in front of the two strikers and deny balls into them. And you know, if we go up into a press to find my midfielder that I would go press on, so they have no options but to play long. And with the ball, they've given me a lot of trust, a lot of freedom. Like you said, I think I have good passing range. So when I get the ball and I'm able to turn and have free spaces to try to find these balls in behind or these threatening balls, but mainly just try to keep moving the ball, keep possession, but try to be dangerous as well. I like to create chances and you know, win the game. So we have to be risky to win the game. So that's kind of what I see and what we've been training now with a year and a half with our coach now. So it's been going well.
Now, Tanner, I look at FootMob and SofaScore and I see on these that you're ranked as one of the top players in Serie B this season. And I kind of want to know, how long did it take you, I guess, to find that consistency? Because with younger players, there's a lot of ups, there's a lot of downs, and sometimes it's hard to find that. How did you start to settle in? Was there one certain responsibility, to Jesse's point, where you just settled into a role and then started to blossom from there? Or are you just getting comfortable overall with who you are as you continue to age?
Well, I'll let you answer that, Tanner, but there are some games where you don't lose the ball. Right? Where you're in the middle of everything and you're finding the right passes. And I mean, I think this is where a big part of your score comes from. But I mean, you've had some really strong performances. Sorry, go ahead.
No, thank you. I think the first thing is, yeah, getting comfortable, being confident when you're playing. But I think that comes from, you know, who supports you, the coach, your players that you play with, your family, just all of it adds into, you know, having the confidence on the field and then the ability comes after. But I think a player without confidence is tough to be in these moments with the pressure and, you know, relegation battle last year to promotion this year. And there's a lot of things going on, the fans, everything, but the coach has given me a lot of trust. He believes in me a lot and he works with me, you know, every week on little details that I can do better. We watch a lot of film. So seeing different things on the bigger perspective, but yeah, I mean, I think I'm growing as a player and hopefully, you know, the work always continues, but to keep developing, getting better and try to reach my highest potential is the goal. But yeah, definitely feeling confident in these games.
When I watched you play previously with the men's national team, typically I watched you, I said, ah, you're maybe a step slow. And it kind of reminded me a little bit about myself when I was adjusting from the full team, from my club team and that step, right, of getting adjusted to the speed of the game. It's super pacey and thinking 2-3 steps ahead. When I watched you play against France, you were phenomenal. The way to break up passes, you got on the ball, you sprayed it properly, and you guys could have been up 2-0 early on France because of your initial balls that went wide and then the whipped in cross, and France wasn't really defending the runners in the box. So I have to ask you, how much have you felt you catching up to the speed of play where you are two or three steps ahead? And what else have you worked on to make sure that you are now at the level where, hey, the U.S. men's national team calls up, I'll be ready for that next opportunity?
Yeah, no, thank you again. I think for me, watching a lot of film, watching a lot of mistakes that I made or missed passes, you know, even if I keep possession, there's probably a more dangerous option that I could have executed. Watching those plays, same defensively, you know, how to break up plays or be in the right passing lines to take the ball. These are things I watch a lot, try to be really hard critic on myself through the games that I've played. And it helps me in the next game to kind of think quicker, or kind of remember a situation that had happened. Because as a six, there's typical situations that, you know, it'll happen in a game that you can kind of read. But yeah, I mean, versus France, we had a good performance and the guys did well. I think also for me, as a young player, I was never really involved with the youth national teams. So I never really knew the system that the youth national team would play. You know, I played in Dallas and then I've played in Venice, and those are like the two systems I know. So getting into the national team, it's a different system. It's different people. My first senior team camp, I didn't know anyone there. My second one was also a whole group of guys that I never met. So it's hard to play with new players. But as I've been going now with the U23s, that was the third camp, it's easier to play with those guys and understand what Marco wants us to do and kind of how the U.S. system wants to play as a whole. So I've just been developing in that, understanding that, and watching more U.S. soccer games and kind of seeing how, you know, my position would play and be in certain positions. Just really studying the game has kind of helped me kind of be quicker in those decisions.
Is there a player that you watch? Because I see that your starting position's a lot better, because I think early on you were asked to do too much, almost like, all right, be Tyler Adams. And it's like, oh, I can't cover the ground like Tyler Adams can and how he does it so fast. But if you watch the Busquets or you watch the Pirlo, where they run smart, right? It's all about the position. And then when they get the ball, it's all right, spray it. So are there players that you watch now, you say, okay, I can learn a lot from what, how they play?
Yeah, I think Rodri for Manchester City is like the player that I've been watching a lot. I mean, he's just on top of his game. And he's similar to me, kind of where, in my opinion, there's certain moments where he could get rid of the ball quicker, especially in their defensive phase. And sometimes he gets caught on the ball. And it's not that he's not thinking fast, but he has the confidence in himself to be able to do or make a play anywhere on the field. And I have the same belief in myself. And so that's one player. And then also Declan Rice for Arsenal. He's been having a great year, but he's more, I would say, like you said, a Tyler Adams, where he covers a lot of ground. He's box to box, even as a six, and he has long legs and he makes a lot of plays. But those are two players that I kind of take notes from, especially now they're playing on the top teams, fighting for the Premier League. So important games every week for them. So how they deal with the pressure, what they do in certain moments in parts of the game. So I've been taking a lot of notes from them.
Tanner, everything you're saying right now warms my heart, because I have conversations when I'm coaching USL League Two, and a lot of those players are not your age, but we're pretty close, 2021. And one of the things that they don't do is they don't watch the game. I'm like, oh, did you guys watch that Champions League game, Europa League game, your local MLS team, whatever it is?
And they're like, no, I went bowling.
Yeah, I just did something else. And you know what? Fair play to them. But I think that and they want to have that balance in their life. But I think if you really want to get great and you really want to reach your potential, you have to be a student of the game. So when I hear you talk about this and you're trying to understand the subtleties and the nuances of how you can get better, I know your ceiling continues to get pushed higher and higher. So that really warms my heart. Now, speaking about the Olympics, we touched upon it, but you played France. And guess who we play first in the Olympics in Paris this summer? It's France. Now, obviously, they're going to add some overage players. We're most likely going to add a few as well. But what notes can you take from that game, that 2-2 draw that we just had, into this first game? And how excited are you? Obviously, you still got to get named to the team, but we're all feeling pretty good you're going to be named about that opportunity to play in the Olympics.
I mean, first, it would be an honor to play in the Olympics. You know, just to be a part of it would be incredible. But I think one of the main things, you know, if I do get called up, for the guys that go, is that, you know, we don't want to just take part. We don't want to just be there. We don't want to, you know, just be like, wow, we're here and everything's going cool. And wow, this is a cool experience. And they gave me this and that. And I think we really want to go with like a mentality that, you know, we're here to play and, you know, we're here to compete and to try to take a medal home. And obviously playing France first, that'll set the tone. That'll set the tone for us and for them as well. It'll be a challenging game. They'll add players. It'll be a different roster, 18-man roster. So a lot of the guys that have been called in maybe won't get called in. It'll be an interesting period for a lot of players. But, I mean, for us, from the game that we played, I think it was really beneficial for us to see how they play. It was the best opponent we played as a cycle so far. And it was also played in a stadium with 15,000 fans. It was the first time we played in front of an audience like that. So just for us, seeing how we manage, how we do things, how things will flow for us. And I think also respecting, I think the main thing really for us is respecting each other, because we haven't had a lot of time on the field together. We've had three camps, and most of those camps, some of the guys are new. We get to meet them. You know, we don't have great relationships with the guys, but the best way to make relationships is respecting each other on the field, like proving to the guys on the team that I should be here. And I think in that France game, a lot of guys earned their respect and earned their relationship. And moving forward from there is going to be, you know, our team's just growing more solid as a unit. And I think at the end of the day, that's what's going to separate us is having a true unit of players that believe in each other and a staff that believes in them as well. So that's what we learned.
This is the first time that I've met you and spoken to you. And I know we've already handed out a ton of compliments, but I'm really impressed with you. Like your intelligence, your commitment to try to be the best player you can. I think coming to Italy has probably been also a big challenge, but a good thing for you, because tactics are so important in this country, and making sure that you develop yourself and create intelligence with the way you play. And I've seen that when you play. And, you know, I think you've been a big part of the team this year. You've played almost every game. And then Gianluca was playing a little bit and then wasn't playing as much. And now he's been playing more again. But in general, I mean, I'm sure it's been nice to have another American there with you in Venice. And tell us a little bit about your experience together, you know, how it's been helpful to have him there with you. And then, you know, the kind of conversations, tactical conversations that you guys have to try to push each other and kind of help each other along the process.
Yeah, well, thank you again. It's been, I think, really fundamental for both of us, to be honest. Obviously, last year we had another American player, Andre Novakovic. He plays for Lecco now, but having him as well was really good for us. But when we first came, me and Gianluca, when we first came in 3 years ago to Serie A, we had no idea what we were facing. Just soccer in Italy is different. The supporters, what it means, everything. And obviously in Serie A, Buzzi was playing a lot more than me. He was a starter for the first half of the season. And once things kind of got difficult, we kind of had to lean on each other. We both weren't playing. We had players playing in front of us that, you know, were going to go on loan. They were on loan with us, going to go back to the team next year. And we were in a difficult moment. And you know, we both have thoughts and conversations. But I think the real thing was a Serie B year when we both decided to stay and fight for the team. And that year started out horrible. We were in a relegation battle. We both kind of started the year. And then in the middle of the season, we weren't playing. And it was like, in the heat of it all, we were like bottom of the table, Serie B, and it was rough. And at the time, you know, in Italy is like, if you're in that situation with a team, you know, you can't just go to the grocery store, or you can't just go shopping or go do something without hearing something from somebody. So being together and kind of just going through that together was, I think, really good. And it built our friendship for sure. Cause in Serie A, you know, we were friends, but you know, we were kind of just teammates and, you know, we talked to each other every now and then, but the first Serie B year, we grew together. And I think now, this year we're both playing a bunch, both having great years. I think it really translates on and off the field of the how we lean on each other on both ends when he was playing or when I was playing. We both kind of lean on each other. And now it's showing in Venezia, but also with the U23s, being able to have these conversations about understanding how we play, where we're going to be in the field, understanding the work rate, when each other's are tired or what they want to do on the field. And I think it helps us for Venezia. We're both been able to make contributions to the team. And then same with the U23s, able to have in a national team stage to have two players that play together every single day is, I think, a huge advantage for us. So, you know, Marco's believed in us and so is our coach Vanoli here at Venezia. So it's been going well.
So it seems like Jesse's trying to sign you. I guess he's becoming an agent. So tell Mike Gartland to watch out. I'm curious, Tanner, if you don't come up to Serie A next season, you don't get promoted, you've proven yourself now at that level, you're a young, talented kid. Is Serie A still the goal? Is that where you want to go? Or do you see yourself moving to another country?
No negative thoughts, Charlie. No negative thoughts right now, man.
This is all positive.
Come on.
But hey, you can still get promoted and get bought, right? By another Serie A club. That's also a possibility.
Well, look, all I'll focus on is these next five games. And after those next five
well
games,
said, well said.
We have the Olympics.
He's trying to trap you.
Yeah. Seeing so, how the media game, how you've been trained in the media. Okay, you're well trained. All right, well done. Mike Gartland, his agent, he's training you. Good stuff. I like to hear it.
Tell us about that Olympic Village.
Yeah, the Olympic Village. Hey, incredible place, Tanner. Too bad we didn't get to experience it. Our coach took our asses out. We didn't even get a chance.
I'm not looking to sign Tanner. I'm taking him on the next team I go to. That's how much I like him, man. I'm taking him with me.
Tanner, this is how quick it was. We checked in the Olympic Village, and I looked to my right, the dorm next to my right, the Swedish girls team comes out, the women's soccer team. They come out of their dorm. And the Brazilian women's team was in the dorm to the other side. They came out, mm-hmm. and they're in their tight Daisy Dukes with and our coach Peter Novak said, "Boys, you have 2 hours, we're out of here. So that was my experience of the Olympic Village. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you guys are going to have an absolute blast. It's such a bonding experience. I mean, obviously it's a dream to represent your country in the Olympics and what can go into that, but the bonds that come from that, they're lifelong. I just hope, you know, we talked about the overage players, right? We had three and you're a midfielder. You're praying that there's not a overage midfielder that comes in because obviously they play. Do you have a special preference for where you think your team needs the most? Because I knew we needed a goalkeeper. Probably could have used two overage defenders. We took one. But do you have like an idea of where those overage players will come from?
I really don't have a clue. I mean, I think there's certain players that can help us. Certain guys that have said they want to come, but you know, things change. I don't, you know, clubs may not release players. Copa America in the summer. A lot of different moving parts, but I mean, whoever we get, we'll be blessed to have them, and hopefully they can contribute to help us. As long as, you know, whoever comes in has got to understand the goal of what we're trying to do and the mindset we're going into it with. So I'm sure they will. I think we have a lot of great talented players that will want to come and take part. So I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, we don't know who it is yet, but yeah, when we know, I'll definitely be in contact with them and be.
He's
there
got quick feet, Chuck. He's tap dancing right now, and I love it.
He is.
I love it, Tanner. He's dodging and weaving right now. That's good. Your feet are fast, and we got plenty of time for it. Chuck gave you two trap questions, and you answered them both correctly. Nice job, Tanner Tessman. Everybody, thank you so much for being on the show. Continued success this season, and we wish you the best luck. Hopefully, Venezia gets promoted to Serie A here. Good luck in your last five games, Tanner Tessman.
Thank you.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Okay, it's your favorite segment to call what you want, Americans Abroad. And we got to start with Gio Reyna. Gets his first ever Premier League start with Nottingham Forest. Gets an assist off the corner in a 2-2 draw versus Wolves. Tanner Tessman hits a brace. We talked about it a little bit earlier in their big 2-0 win, over Brescia. Alexander Dejas plays the full 90 for Club America in their 5-1 win over second place Toluca. Malik Tillman scores his 7th Eredivisie goal of the season in PSV's ass-whooping of Vitesse 6-0. And Yunus Musa provides an assist in a 3-3 draw versus Sassuolo. And not a good result for Milan. Now they take on Inter in the Milan derby. If Inter win that one, they win Serie A. They win the Scudetto. So, Chuck, I'm coming to you first.
Yeah.
Who stood out for you in Americans Abroad this week?
Well, outside of in that ass-whooping, Ricardo Pepi was... was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, where is he? Still, he's MIA.
MIA. It's Gio Reyna getting his first start. I mean, it was about damn time. For him to make an impact too. I mean, I was pleased with what I saw from him. His work rate, his commitment to the team, trying to be creative. You know, Wolves are a good team. They're very difficult to play against, and I thought he did really well of getting on the ball when he could, connecting passes. He won an aerial duel. He was committed defensively because that's the only way you're staying in this team is playing on both sides of the ball. So I thought this was a big step for him to move forward and get some more playing time.
How about how they used him? What do you think of how they used him? And do you think he'll start next match?
I do think he'll start next match because he's very good on set piece delivery. And that's going to be a necessity for Nottingham Forest. And how they used him, I would prefer for him to be more central. He likes to come out wide. And I know that it's kind of like a crutch because you feel like you maybe get some more time and some more 1v1 opportunities when you can drift out wide. But I would like to see him more advanced and under the, you know, the striker as opposed to being out wide. What about you?
Yeah, I think so. I think for the most part, he played smart. He played, started out a little bit safe, got himself going in the match a little bit. I think he was dynamic at times, which was important. And that's the thing that I've kind of always asked to see more out of him, right? Like, we know when he gets on the ball that he's special and he can make special passes. It's just, again, now when you're playing at the highest level, the tempo, the power in the game, it means that you've got to really insert yourself and be running, be sprinting, be pressing, be winning duels at times, and then also be dynamic in the way that you find the ball and that the way that you connect. So in general, I thought it was a definitely a good performance, and I hope to see him get the start again against Everton.
Do you think he will?
Yeah, I think he will.
Do you think he did enough?
Yeah, I think he did enough.
Yeah.
And again, I think set piece delivery is going to be key, especially for Forest to score goals against a team like Everton as well. Nottingham Forest, to give everybody some context, 1 point out of the relegation zone with five games left to go in the Premier League. They got Everton away. Then they're home to Man City. That probably won't go well. Then away to Sheffield. Then home to Chelsea. And then away to Burnley. So it could really come down to that Burnley game. Luton at 1 point behind them. So Luton obviously looking and chasing points as well. All right, Jesse, who's your American abroad? Who are you highlighting?
Josh Sargent. It wasn't the easiest game. They played at Preston North End. And Preston played almost every ball long. Every goal kick. Most times when the goalkeeper had the ball went direct. And so it can be a little bit frustrating, I think, when you're a striker in a game like that, and you feel like as soon as the ball is given away that you're already running back down the defensive side of the pitch. But, you know, he stayed disciplined and focused. He came underneath a lot in the first half, and they have the number 10 Holmes that plays a little bit as well, like a second striker with him. And then I thought in the second half, he was further up the pitch and he had created two scoring chances. And one of the things about Josh Sargent is he's not the biggest guy, but he is strong in duels. And when he needs to get a body on a defender and control a ball, and he bumped a defender in the box and spun and almost got a good shot off with his right foot and almost scored a goal at that moment. But, you know, this is what the championship is at times. It's not always about how pretty the match is. You've got to have the right kind of mentality, especially when you go on the road. You've got to be able to fight for balls. You've got to be able to keep yourself in games, and you've got to then find ways to make plays when you need to. So it wasn't the most elegant performance where he was really involved in the game, but I thought he helped his team a lot. And in the end, didn't get on the score sheet, but still they got the win, and an important win that keeps them in the hunt for the playoff at the end of the year.
Yeah, to give you some context for everybody that might not be following the championship, they got a 6-point lead to stay in that playoff spots. They play Bristol City this upcoming weekend. They got Swansea at home as well after that, and then away to Birmingham. Birmingham's trying to not get relegated, so that one might be a bit of a scrap. And they probably just need 3 points at this point to make sure they get into the playoff promotion race, which would be very cool to see him participate in that if they can get into the Premier League once again. Now for me, I'm going with Tanner Tessman. I know we had him on as a guest, so this is probably going to be doubling down once again after we showered him with praise, but I just was really impressed with how he's performed, not only in this particular game, but throughout this season. I mean, he has 6 goals and 3 assists, both career highs. What's funny is that we didn't ask him this, but Busio also has exactly 6 goals and 3 assists. So curious to see which one ends up finishing a little bit better in the goals and assists department. He's played 32 times this season. Obviously, they're trusting him in a meaningful way, and he's only missed one match due to yellow card suspension. Doesn't get hurt very often. Hopefully, we didn't jinx him. He's got 90 total appearances in 3 seasons at Venezia, and he had a brace this past weekend, as we've discussed.
And he had a 10 out of 10 on the interview. He nailed the interview.
He nailed it.
Absolutely crushed it.
he nailed it. So very cool to have him on the show. And I actually picked him prior to locking him in as a guest.
Okay, Jimmy. You sound sure like Charlie with the word of the day.
You sound like Charlie with the word of the day, man. Okay, here we go. So anyway, shout out to Tanner Tessman once again. One big midweek fixture for everybody to put on their radar. It's Roma versus AC Milan. Leg two of the Europa League quarterfinals. Milan's down 1-0 after giving up a set piece in leg one. That game kicks off at 3 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. I'll be in studio for it. Chuck, I think we're doing it together.
Predictions for that. You guys have predictions?
I really like Roma right now. They've just been reinvigorated
at home.
I know.
Roma at home.
But I don't know.
I think the whole group right now is kind of, now that Liverpool looks like they're getting knocked out, it's like almost, you know, I mean, obviously Leverkusen's involved. I think that at Rome, this will be tough for Milan.
Do you think there's any chance Liverpool will come back and take out Atalanta?
No.
Or is this over?
Atalanta's been very good at home.
I think playing at Atalanta is not easy, and they will man mark that game. They will try to lock that game down. I think this will be tough for Liverpool.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that Golazo show that's happening, want to make every goal all in one place. Come hang out with us. Starts at Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern on the Golazo Network and Paramount Plus. You're going to see me. You're going to see Chuck. You're going to see Nico Kantor, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you come in and hang out with us for that day on Thursday. All right, we're hitting our next break. When we come back, we are going to have the head coach of El Farolito, Santiago Lopez, joining us to talk all things Open Cup.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back once again to Call It What You Want. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Charlie Davies and Jesse Marsh. And we have a very special guest joining us again on the show. We've got two special guests happening. That is a first for Call It What You Want. It is the head coach of El Farolito, Santiago Lopez. Santi, thank you so much for your time. We're excited to see that El Farolito is in the third round of the U.S. Open Cup after taking down Portland Timbers 2. And then who'd you take down in the second round to get here, to get to the third round against the Oakland Roots?
Thanks for having me here. It was Central Valley Fuego from
that's right, USL Jermaine Jones' team.
You had to do Jermaine Jones like that.
You love to see it. I mean, honestly, is this a little too easy for you guys right now as you approach this one against the Roots?
No, definitely not. It's been very, very difficult, different types of stresses, but it's great. It's amazing to be in these situations and keep learning.
Very good, Santiago. Congratulations on the success so far. So I'd like to hear a little bit the way you liked your teams to play, who your influences have been in your life and where you developed kind of your idea of how to play the game. And then tell us a little bit about your players and your team and what kind of backgrounds they come from. And, you know, I want to kind of hear the story of the whole team.
Oh, that's a great question. I think my role models as head coaches, I think it will be Zidane, because he knows how to run the dressing room very well. He knows how to manage different personalities, focus on his tactics. And then the team, everybody's just have a different background. There's players that are very local that they got developed in the third college division pyramid. And then there's some that are ex-pros. So I get to deal with a lot of different personalities, backgrounds. There's players from Ivory Coast. So I'm kind of getting the French mixed in there, a little bit of the Spanish they're learning. So our style of play is definitely, I try to take advantage as much as I can when there's a set piece. I like a lot of trick plays. I like to pressure high. I like to pressure high. And when we don't, we don't have the numbers up there. We're not organized, you know, settle nicely in the back, the last big, you know, create a small pocket and try to counter for sure.
Now, Santiago, I had a chance to get to know El Farolito because I helped coach the San Francisco Glens. And so anytime we're like, oh, man, those guys are pretty good and they're sneaky talented and it's always a hard game. And if we could dodge you guys, we would. But what I think is what maybe people don't know is that you're not training every day, right? I mean, these guys have other lives. They have to go earn their scratch in different parts and have to feed a family, whatever it may be. And so that was one of the challenges we had. Even though we had college kids at the USL League Two level, they still have these other things in their lives that have to be factored into it. So I'm very curious as to how you're training, how much you're training, because now that you're playing the Roots, who I believe you lost to in the Open Cup last year, you have some chance at revenge, and their USL championship team and are training every day, the professional outfit. How do you find that balance? And is the motivation of obviously getting a chance at the Roots again this year enough to get the guys, everybody working together and on the same page?
I think it's trust and communication. The group, the group trusts me and they communicate everything they do outside of training. Unfortunately, a lot of these players have to make their way of living through work during the week and even tournaments or games on the weekend. So fatigue plays a big factor. I need to know who plays on a Saturday morning and our games at NPSLs on Saturday nights. So I try to balance that out to see, you know, game time, rest time. And we only train twice a week. So I really need to summarize a lot of these little details into one training session. So two training sessions on the week. But I'm very fortunate that these players already know how to play. So I just have to do and work on little details, try to get the environment to be very, very healthy, very family orientated. So it just creates a good bonding and we take advantage of the time together.
That's incredible that you have to deal with players who may have played earlier in the day. For you, Santiago, what's your ambition? What's your goal? So if you know, you've been able to obviously make a name for yourself at this level, do you have any ambition to coach in MLS, to coach for a youth national team? Like where are you on your path right now?
Yeah, for me, it's step by step. I've been in this situation or the amateur level for 10 years, 14 years, creating and developing myself as an individual. I've been working on my UEFA licenses for the past 4 years. Of course, every coach wishes to be on the top level. If Jesse wants to take me as an assistant, I'll be more than happy.
Yes!
There we go.
You know, just taking step by step, learning and appreciating the moment, getting to know a lot of people here in the area, really representing my region. I was born and raised here in the Bay Area. There's, you know, people around here know that there's a lot of talent here. It's just, it's a bit more difficult to be seen. A lot of players, you know, Latin community end up going to Mexico, trying out over there for the U15s, U17s, and they really don't develop their game here. But there's some that stay here and there's a lot of great talent. So as of right now, just try to help out the community here. Put my dad's name up front. I'm very blessed to be in this responsibility of what me and my two sisters with the restaurant. So we're general managers, owners of the restaurant. And at the same time, never forgetting about the tradition of El Farolito that started here in 85. So little by little, I'll be, you know, growing and getting to know and manage groups of individuals, not just in the restaurants, also in the game, try to develop my game model as well. So hopefully in the future, I could help out youngsters or even adults to reach their full potential.
That's incredible.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So I want to touch a little bit as well on the history. You talked a little bit there about the restaurant. So El Farolito won the Open Cup, right? In 93. Tell us a little bit about that and how, and then, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the team started in 85 in the fourth division of the San Francisco Football League. And at that time it was one of the, I guess it was one of the strongest leagues in the country. And they ended up winning promotion year after year into reaching the Premier League. And it just created a great bond, a great group of players. There were some ex-professional first division, second tier Mexican players. There's Colombian players, Central American players at that time. They got a group together to compete in the Open Cup. And at that time, the MLS didn't exist. So it was a bit different of the level, but regardless, it was a national tournament. They ended up winning it under another team that my dad ended up getting affiliated and using their uniforms. But it was still the 100% El Farolito squad. After that, San Francisco League started just falling apart. We were still part of the league, but my dad ended up focusing more. He was basically more just kind of gave up on soccer. And then he was having a bad time with the coach at that year. We were sitting on seventh place. He asked me as a favor to take over the club. I had to play professional in Mexico. I had no intentions of being involved with the game anymore. So just to help, you know, try to be a good son, help my dad out, I told him I'll just take over the team just for the remaining of the season. Well, I liked it. I ended up learning a lot. I learned that I don't like to lose and I have to be responsible for myself. I have to be responsible for all those losses. And I ended up just taking charge of that. And we got a place in the NPSL. It's our fifth time in the Open Cup. So, it's all thanks to the players that were here and my father.
You know, I think I competed in that Open Cup that year with the team called the Milwaukee Rampage. We didn't make it far enough to play you guys, but I'm old enough to remember that tournament, guys, before MLS. I guess the last thing I would touch on is, I mean, what's your feeling? You know, obviously I heard now that you played Oakland Roots last year, not having MLS teams in it. I mean, what's your feeling on that? Would you rather be playing an MLS team now that you've advanced this far and really challenge yourself? Do you like, or is it maybe that you have a chance to actually win the tournament and repeat what you guys did in 1993? I mean, what's your feeling on that?
Yeah, our feeling is just game by game, because we all know that situations vary. It could be a red card on the 10th minute against a fifth division team, and it's going to be complicated. So we just know that every game we have to adapt. And we never really set goals of like, let's reach to play an MLS team or win the championship. So we just work week by week, focused on certain things in training, and then see who are the best 18 available for the match. And that's just a kind of routine I like to follow and express to the players that they need to step up every single week, and the best are we're just going to be playing.
You'd be more excited to play an MLS team though, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And right now with this next round, we were crossing fingers it was going to be Oakland Roots, because last year I made some terrible mistakes and that cost us the game. And we had preseason this early February this year. And I tested out two different squads. I really liked what I saw. We ended up losing 1-0 in that preseason match. So I know the team is very, very confident. They know what they need to do.
Wait. Santi, we gotta rewind. Terrible mistakes. Can you define those? Because we're all, you know, we're all coaches here, or at least I am in my mind, and Jesse's a real one. And Chuck, I don't know if he'll ever be a coach, but Santi, like tell us your regrets in that game. What happened?
Yeah, I ended up really thinking that the first half was going to be so intense, and I was just saving my best attacking players for the second half. And I ended up playing more defensive players in the first, but those defensive players weren't really well organized in our tactics, just to pressure up top. And that is when we would get the ball, we wouldn't counter very fast. We didn't take advantage of those middle pockets when they were attacking, and the physicality as well. I ended up playing a couple of players that weren't as physical and weren't as prepared for the intensity. And at the end of the day, it's just a combination of everything, you know, mental, physical. And
you gave them too much respect. Come on, Santiago.
Hey, how about this? An honest coach who takes responsibility. I love to see it. Santiago. I love to see it, man.
Thank you so much for your time.
Stop for Jimmy then.
We wish you the very best against the Oakland Roots. We hope that you can get your revenge. Hopefully it's nice and competitive, and long may this run of yours continue, and continued success with El Farolito.
I'm trying to get an El Farolito kit. So if you got any extras, I'll rock that up here. Hey, that right
extra
now.
Small, extra small.
Yeah. come to the Taqueria. We'll link you up with.
Hey, that would be awesome. That would be awesome.
We got to do one of our shows from the restaurant at some point. That would be
absolutely. All the best,
thank you
man.
So much for your time.
All the best.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
XS up top, XL down low.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
You're obviously so invested, right, in growing the game and in what soccer can still become in this country and the further progress it can make. 2026. How optimistic are you about what that changes for this country and what happens with the game?
Kate, if it's half the springboard that 1994 was, if I had a nickel for every time someone said, 1994 is when I got turned on to the game, right? I'd be a rich man, because that was such a special moment in our country in a time where we didn't know a lot about the game, right? We didn't have this rich history. First time ever, we know how to put on events in this country like nobody else.
Amen, that's true. Right? Very true.
Right.
Final in New Jersey.
Final in the great state of New Jersey.
You've got to be happy about that one, right?
Yeah. And what else could we ask for in this? I'd like to think, and I said this the night we did not make the World Cup, I said, this team is built for 2026. Because I'd been with the youth national teams at that point for a while. I'm like, 2026, this is when this team will peak. And I still think, and I know there's a lot of shit that goes around the national team, and there's talk all the time about getting, I still think when we get there, we'll be able to show the world that we can play.
That is a clip of Tony Meola on Kicking It. Are currently nominated for a Sports Emmy show on the Golazo Network and Paramount Plus. Awesome, Chuck. How was that show overall with Tony?
Incredible. One of our best. I mean, Tony's a legend, right? The game. And to hear his story, there were ups and downs. It got super emotional, but I'll always remember Tony when I retired and I was getting into the media space, and him willing to help me along with the radio and Sirius XM. And those are 3-hour shows. And for him to help me along the way, give me, you know, all the advice that I could get during that time was a huge help. And I mean, he's just a legend. The guy kicked for the New York Jets in the NFL. The guy was an actor. He was a goalie, 16 shutouts, clean sheets.
He got drafted by the Yankees. Didn't he get drafted by the Yankees as well?
In high school. I mean, this guy, he won the Herman Trophy as a freshman.
Like, he ran for president. Didn't he run for president?
Yeah. I mean, he might as well have been an astronaut as well. Just supremely talented, a freak athlete, and an awesome person. So, he doesn't get the credit he deserves when talking about, you know, the greats. Like, Jimmy, how often do we hear about that KC team that he was the league MVP? They win the league. They won every trophy. And that team never gets brought up. It's always Jesse's DC or Jesse's Chicago Fire. I never hear anything about that Kansas City team. Sometimes people even throw in the Miami Fusion, for instance. But I don't think the Wizards.
Jesse, you played against. Were you in that? No, they played the Rapids in the final.
Yeah, no, they beat us. They beat us. Tony stood on his head in the final in 2000.
That's right.
We had a great performance and we lost 1-0, and it was because Tony saved them, literally. So, I mean, I always have admired Tony from afar when I was a player, and then as a person. And, you know, I've really enjoyed, you know, kind of reconnecting with him and over the last couple months and had some fun times with him. So I think he does a great job with it all. And I know he's a good guy. And, you know, these guys, again, we've talked a lot about this. These guys we're all kind of my heroes, but they're all down to earth dudes. So, yeah, I love Tony.
Yeah, I played with Tony for 4 years at Kansas City. And it was, to your point, Jesse, he was somebody I looked up to and admired. And And I used to cut out all the old 1990 World Cup guys and put them on my closet door at home, you know, whether it was Mike Windischman, Tony Miola, they all had the mullets, you know, and the high shorts.
When was your first year in MLS? 98, Jimmy?
99 was my first year. So actually, my first ever goal that I scored in MLS was on a corner kick against Kansas City. I was playing for San Jose at the time. And it was against Tony, and Alexi Lawless was marking me. I don't know if you can call it marking. He was watching me jump over him and score, but it was such a big thrill. Oh yeah,
you dunked on Lawless.
I dunked on Lawless. Yes, I did.
Alexi, don't let Jimmy. He's trashing you right now. He said he dunked all over you.
But for me to have scored with Alexi Lawless marking me and Tony Miola in goal was such a big thrill, and then to be his teammate for a number of years. Was a big thrill as well. And I learned a lot and I became a better defender because he was behind me. And so I owe Tony a great deal for helping me achieve the heights that I did. So without getting sentimental myself, that's it. We're calling it a show. Call What You Want is over. This has been a fantastic episode. We've had some great guests and we look forward to coming back and talking to you on Thursday after the Europa League game. So thank you for all the support as always. And we'll see you soon. Later.
Hey, I want my belt back, Jesse.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.